Hello and welcome to a brand new episode of Any Given Game Day with Mike Carlson. The trio are back. It is Wildcard Weekend. We're very excited. I'm Kieran O'Connor. Mike, you're with us. John, you're with us. Mike, how the hell are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. Feeling pretty good, and finished the season with not only the, which we will go into later, the regular season championship of the Best Bet Society, but with another rush of 11 and 5 weeks picking the games straight up, which put me around 70% for the season. So that's okay. That's very acceptable to me. So yeah, I'm feeling pretty good. Better than a lot of guys who got I love when they say here's the latest list of all the coaches fired on Black Monday, and it begins with three guys who were fired during the season. Or two during the season and one on, I don't know what you call it, Gray Sunday. The Falcons couldn't wait till Black Monday to get rid of Raheem and Terry Fontenot.
They I don't know if you saw, but the Falcons owner hugged him at the press conference and was,
It's like a mafia style thing, isn't it? It's like the kiss of
like he sacked him
death.
like 2 hours later. But anyway, John, one of those people obviously that has left
I
is
guess humdin means something different in Ireland.
It may be so. Stefanski is out. He's out at the Browns coach.
Yeah, he is. After
Feel about that?
6 years, the two-time NFL Coach of the Year is now. He was up until this time yesterday the most coveted NFL head coaching candidate. But I think there's been a development in the last what is it, 18 or so hours that has put that into has changed that around. But yeah, there is Black Monday should display the traditional head coach merry-go-round, and Kevin Stefanski of the Cleveland Browns has paid the price for two very underwhelming seasons. And ultimately, as I've said to you before, Kieran, I think that the Deshaun Watson trade was always going to cost somebody their job, and they've it looks like it was Stefanski and Andrew Berry, the GM, is sticking around for at least another while yet. But yeah, there's a lot of positions to be filled at the top of the NFL. And what ends up happening in Baltimore in the AFC North, and I think in New York, the blue side of New York will be quite interesting because Mr. Harbaugh will be very much in demand.
Yeah, Mike, we'll get you on this. But supposedly within 45 minutes, and for those of you who don't know, John Harbaugh has been sacked as the Baltimore Ravens coach after 18 years. Supposedly 45 minutes after he was sacked, he'd received call from seven NFL teams, despite the fact that only six NFL teams currently have sacked their manager or looking for a new manager. So
Yeah,
somebody called
they got a call from Baltimore. Like, I wonder what he'd be like with Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry.
somebody called out to talk, was like preemptively striking.
That had all the trademarks of a very good agent immediately seeding the ground, because the seven was such a good number. It's like everyone's then saying, well, which team with a coach is looking for him, and it'll get other teams thinking about it. I did a show on Monday about the coaching carousel, but we did it on Tuesday morning. And it was like we had, no sooner had finished and I'd hopped on the train for London, than Harbaugh was fired first thing. I find that very hard to believe, and especially because if Loop makes that field goal at the end of the game, 44-yard, eminently makeable field goal for the win, we're not having this conversation, as far as I'm concerned. What are
We
they
might be
going to
talking
do?
about
We,
Mike Tomlin being out. That's what we might be talking about right now.
Yeah, it's absolutely possible. And I don't get it. I understand Harbaugh's shortcomings and the way that they can be. And apparently, reading the gossip columns, a lot of this had to do with his refusal to fire Todd Monken, the offensive coordinator. And they've had offensively problems for years, and they've always been kind of the same problem. And the one year or 2 years in which they really did well was when Lamar was healthy, and then they picked up Derrick Henry and they had the two of them healthy at the same time, and it was a tremendous offense that probably should have gone a little farther in the playoffs than it did. But the reality is, when you're dependent on a quarterback like Lamar, and the better his legs are, the more dependent upon him you are, there's always going to be a problem. It was Deshaun Watson's problem. It was Kyler Murray's problem. It's Jalen Hurts's problem, I think. Watching him this year, I'm just not convinced that he's the runner that he was last year. He certainly seems less, more reluctant to run, more reluctant to kind of put himself out there. So, I think the interesting thing is that Stefanski was almost the like top candidate for other teams once he got fired. When you looked at the lists of who wanted to talk to him, they were pretty low. Maybe Baltimore will hire Stefanski.
And Harbaugh over to Cleveland, just do the old switcheroo.
It would be an interesting one because I mean the names that come up the most often are Stefanski and Clint Kubiak, which I think is kind of strange, the offensive coordinator at Seattle. But I think the names that probably should come up the most often are Vance Joseph and Brian Flores, although Flores may still be sort of blackballed for head coaching by the league, because of what went on in Miami and his willingness to kind of expose that.
Yeah, I'm surprised you said Brian Flores, I must admit, but I don't see that happening. But yeah, look, John, you both are right. I mean, the butterfly. If Justin Tucker hadn't been, well, not the nicest kind of deviant.
He was awful in his final season anyway, so I don't think we can
Yeah,
do that excuse.
he had been on a downhill for a couple of
Yeah.
years, actually.
Even as
And
horny as he gets, he surely would have made a 44-yard field goal. I'm just saying.
well, I mean, again, we're back to Baltimore and Cleveland. What Tucker did was basically what Deshaun Watson did, and Cleveland then gave him a no cut contract, which there, is still hanging over. I think the reason Andrew Berry wasn't fired was probably that they knew it would be very hard to get a GM to come in with that $80 million cloud hanging over you,
Yeah,
your roster
100%.
building and all of that kind of stuff. And it won't be easy for whoever comes in under him. He won't have much leeway as a coach to choose rosters and personnel because they are so limited. And that's going to be up to Barry. But if Harbaugh had just said, no, he's still my kicker, he would have taken a lot of gruff, especially from the TMZ gossip column part of the NFL. But
Yeah, but he
he
was
would
suspended
still
for
be
10
there.
games anyway, so they probably would have tried one out. And actually, he did get let go. And after suspension, he had a tryout with the New Orleans Saints.
And lost out to
And
Charlie Smith.
he actually lost out to Cade York, which shows
Well, it was Blake Groupie. Who cares? But
another ex
Charlie
another
Smith
ex
got the job in
Brown.
the end.
Charlie Smith got the grub in the end.
Well, I've a quick one for Mike on this, if you don't mind.
Go for it. Look,
As we
no
all
time in the world.
saw,
It's
just because we're not going to have much time to be talking about the Cleveland Browns for the rest of the season, given they're
they're
not a
not on the
playoff
list,
team.
no.
But I wonder, Mike, if you could put into some sort of context the achievement of Myles Garrett winning the year or winning the sack record for a season, 23 sacks passing Strahan and T.J. Watt
Yeah.
in. I think there were a lot of people just before you answer. A lot of people I've seen have talked about, Garrett had an extra game and certainly compared to Strahan, but he did he got his 23 sacks in like 100 and something less snaps than Strahan did. So the game thing is a little bit of subterfuge. But anyway, still. But what do you put that into context and just in terms of sheer dominance, especially for a poorly performing team?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the oddities is that there's no way officially to acknowledge the longer seasons. We still talk about 1,000-yard receivers, and I go back to 12 games a year, when 1,000 yards was almost 100 yards a game. Now a 1,000-yard season is like 60 yards a game, and that's not a spectacular performance. So the record is the record. I don't want to necessarily put an asterisk on it. I don't think the extra game is as important as the fact that Brett Favre laid down for Strahan to
Well,
give
so
him
did Joe
to give
Burrow did
him.
something very, very
Well,
similar in
not
the.
quite, because Favre wasn't even trying to pass.
Okay.
He never even cocked his arm. He just rolled out and laid down. And I think Garrett this season, you could argue quite well that he was the best player in the NFL. On a team that was constantly playing from behind, or and a defense that played remarkably well. But I thought what I didn't like was the officials stopping the game to go through all the celebration for him, given
Yes.
that the other team had the ball. given that it was still a close game.
Yeah.
And
You got to give it to Cleveland. That's like a Cleveland Super Bowl. That's the
no, the
closest
game
they'll ever come
shouldn't
to
have
some sort of
stopped.
celebration.
No, they didn't. Apparently, they didn't, because people were saying, oh, Taylor's whining about it, but they didn't. Apparently, they made no previous arrangement about it. They didn't ask him if it would be okay. They didn't, do anything like that. And I noticed that when Harrison Smith went off the field for probably the last time, we assume, in Minnesota, the Vikings called timeout. Then they substituted him, a one player substitution, to give them time to, at least celebrate. It would only have been a minute, say, as opposed to what did it take there? What, about an hour and a half of there. But yeah, I think that was just a better thing to do, because I just hate the idea that individual achievements matter more than the result of the game. And I know it's endemic in the way we cover the game now, the way everyone looks at it. They were celebrating Stephon Diggs made a catch that gave him a $750,000 bonus, and it's like, stop the game and give him
Bring out a
$750,000,
big one of those large checks. Yeah. Mid
Yeah.
play.
Definitely the game should have been stopped. I did find it quite funny and ironic that Zach Taylor gave out about it, though, a little bit, because he claimed that at the time the Bengals were playing hurry-up offense and all this sort of stuff. And if anyone who watched the game, the Bengals were utterly, utter dog shit for like most of the game. They scored in the first quarter, they scored two field goals, they scored nothing in the second quarter till almost the last play of the game. With a touchdown. They didn't score anything in the third quarter, and this is 5 minutes to go in the match, and he's claiming that they're playing hurry up offense. And not only were they not doing anything, they were all didn't care. They had a second and eight, which they ran to make it third and two on the halfway line. They ran again and got stuffed. It was fourth and one on the halfway line. Neither team are in contention for the playoffs. They're on the halfway line, and they punted it instead of going for it on fourth and one. So if that's what hurry up offense is.
Well, I mean, I feel sorry for Pete Carroll, who's basically getting paid a 3-year contract for coaching 1 year. So he's basically getting 1 year's pay for each win he got, which is not a bad thing. But who was the Carlson of the week this week?
Oh God, I hope it's not me.
Daniel
Daniel?
Carlson's 60-yard field goal at the buzzer to win the game. And Pete Carroll's coaching genius, the game with Kansas City, there were eight field goals and a safety.
Yes. Yeah. I'm
Not
back.
even
I
a
ended
hint
up
of a
back in the under
touchdown.
in that game
Yeah.
on
Just gotta say
Sunday.
that, Mike, you're always the Carlson of the week on this show, just so you know.
Would you like to
Oh,
know the odds for the Super Bowl, guys?
you should have taken the under as your pick for the week, because you would have
I
been in a better
know.
position then.
I know I really should have. The Super Bowl winner.
Let me guess. It's 4-1. It's 4-1 for the Seahawks.
It's 7-2 now, which means they've been a little bit
Wow.
nimbled at on Betfair.
Wow.
Seahawks are 7-2. The LA Rams are 4-1. Obviously, both NFC teams. Denver Broncos 6-1. The Eagles 15-2. The Houston Texans 9-1. The Patriots 9-1. The Bills 9-1. It is 11's bar. If you really fancy something, Carolina Panthers are 225 to 1.
That's all? That amazes me. I would think they're a longer shot than that.
You know, he's only thrown the ball. Oh my God, this is now, I'm not gonna remember. He's only thrown the ball over 20 yards around about 9 times this season.
Brilliant.
That, that's
Yeah. That's how you get to the
so they
postseason, apparently.
they progressively move the ball down the field, but they're not able to. But actually, funny, and this is completely off, Denver are a little bit like that, Mike, if you ask me. I would be very surprised. Like, if
Denver are a
Denver
lot like
went,
that. Yeah.
yeah, like they run the ball and progressively get down. Like, Denver, to me, are kind of a lay because I think if they go, which could easily happen, if they go two or three scores down, how do you come back?
No,
Like, we haven't
that's
seen it that season, you
I've
know?
made that I've made that point. And someone said to me that the ideal Sean Payton drive is a 17 plays, 9.5 minute drive that ends in a field goal.
I'm sure that's how they opened it. Like, they had a 7 minute
Yeah.
drive for a field goal on Sunday to open up their game.
Speaking of weird plays, just before we get, I know you're eager to get into the previews there, Kieran, but
I'm
just
loving
one thing
life
that
right
I
now.
particularly enjoyed. I guess I've certainly never seen this. I'm not sure if you guys have ever seen this, but the Indianapolis Colts running two fake punts in a row, including a fake punt on a first and 10, wasn't that
Brilliant.
just outstanding? Like that was
Everyone looks
my
so confused.
I didn't think that, like, that's something if you play Madden and press the wrong button sometimes, that's what happens.
Yeah, I thought maybe that was it was a deliberate thing
The second
just
one
to
was
mess
never,
with.
because I think they spotted 12 men on the field, so they're like, run, 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 get the play going. But just the balls of call, just the sheer, I don't even know what the word is. I would say ineptitude, but it paid off. But like, just the balls to play a fake punt on a first and 10 is just amazing.
I spent some time trying to do rock and roll, because like Ray Davis had a big game for Buffalo, and of course he's the king,
Oh yeah.
but I was trying to work out something with Philadelphia, like John Paul Jorge and Ringo, that would end with Kelee Ringo, who had probably the single dumbest play I've seen all season when Josh Johnson rolled out and got the
Oh yeah,
winning touchdown,
he just covered
he stood
the
there, and Josh Johnson Johnson pump faked, and he literally stopped and turned around to look for
zone.
somebody to cover, and there was nobody to cover. And he just stood
Yeah.
there as Johnson went in. I've never, it was like he was playing in a zombie daze, sort of,
Yeah.
and which my Philadelphia Eagle fan friends say he was doing anyway. It's like as soon as he walks on the field, it's the other team puts a spotlight on him. They just throw the ball to whoever he's covering.
We had an email from Jason again, our Seahawks, who wanted to know what we thought about, or Mike, what you thought about the Seahawks' chances for the Super Bowl. He was asking about the MVP market, and of course, Jason Smith and Jabuba. The MVP market's closed now because he can't actually bet on it. And I think he would be a long. I know he said it would be refreshing to have a non-QB winner, wouldn't it? But
Well,
that
there haven't been many in
there haven't been many.
lately, and wide receivers are few and far between. But I think he's not even the most valuable receiver in his division. That's Puka.
Yeah, and
And
again, amazing at the weekend.
I would argue that Puka is the Rams' most valuable player, in this Stafford Drake May kind of debate. Which kind of leads me over toward May, but it's, there's, I don't find the arguments for either guy immensely convincing. I think it's a kind of down year for MVPs.
Will the bye help Seattle this week?
Well, what, sorry,
Will the
the
bye
bye
week
help them?
get them?
Not as much as it would some other teams, I think. I think Seattle would be prepared, to roll, but they are a reasonably balanced team. And I was amused by people saying, well, finally, Sam Darnold, got the monkey off his back and proved he could win a big game. Sam Darnold didn't win that game. They allowed 3 points.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's not an argument against Sam Darnold. The idea of winning a Super Bowl when you've got a really good defense, is having a quarterback who doesn't lose the game for you. First off, and it helps if he can compete. And Darnold has won 26 regular season games in the last 2 years, which is pretty good. Winning 13 and getting disposed of by Minnesota, that didn't work out so well for them. But I think Seattle's got a pretty balanced team. Smith and Jigba's is had a great season, and gives them a lot of flexibility. But it's their defense that covered it. And we've got segue into the six games, into the playoffs. We've got three teams who are probably the three best defensive teams in the league, and have sort of outstanding defenses. And that's not counting Cleveland, obviously.
Burning you, John.
Yeah,
No,
but
he'll be
yeah,
defensive player of the year. It's fine.
and I think you could argue that that Philadelphia and the Rams might be 4 and 5. Philadelphia certainly could be 4 or 5. The Rams might be 6 or 7. But you probably, it's a defensive playoffs to me.
Okay. Just before we get to the games, in 10 seconds. Who would you back right now to win the Super Bowl? Mike, since you were talking there, If you need to know again, Seahawks, Rams, Broncos, Eagles, Texans, Patriots, Bills, Jags, Packers, Bears. I'm not going any farther because we're into like the 20s. But John is thinking. I can see John thinking. I can tell
That would be
he's
Carolina,
mental.
right? No. Who would I back right now?
On the prices,
See,
I'm sitting.
I don't feel like it's going to be either of the top seeds for some reason. So I wouldn't be surprised if the Rams pull it off.
Yeah,
Okay, 4-1.
I was thinking the same thing. I mean, the Rams were favorites for a long time. If they get back into their rhythm, there's no reason why they couldn't be again. But yeah, I just have this weird feeling.
I've had those, Mike. Trust me.
That the winner of the Buffalo Jacksonville game
Yeah, I think
is
Jacksonville
going
are in with a good shot too, actually.
is yeah. I have
Okay,
this
well.
strange. Jacksonville has actually been a lot better since the arrival of Jacoby Myers. And I'm not putting it all on his shoulders in terms of what his performance has been, but for some reason their offense has all of a sudden settled down, and they're a strong defensive team. But they've got a lot of pretty good players on that defense. And I think Buffalo are hard to predict, and Josh Allen can always find the Superman cape that he seems to have lost recently, and that makes it tough. But I think Jacksonville, could wind up having home field advantage if they beat Buffalo this week, for at least another week, and thereby just beat another team that which would be, where are they? Jacksonville's the to the 3 seed, so they would play, if New England were to lose, it's like there is a path for them. There's a
Chargers.
path for them to the yeah. There's a path for them to the Super Bowl.
There is. And so let's talk about the games. And this is really interesting because obviously the three of us have been working together for a number of years now on NFL Only Better and now on the show. And this weekend was kind of a weekend that we sort of said it can be a little bit, the good teams destroying the bad teams. However, this version of Wild Card Weekend is interesting because you have got one game, the first game, which is the game at 9:30 on Saturday, the Rams at the Panthers, which is 1-6 about the Rams, with the Panthers being 4-1. But after that, Packers, Bears, Bills, Jags, complete pick'em games, 49ers, Eagles, very little in the betting, Chargers, Patriots, what's the spread on that? Gone to 3.5. Texans, Steelers, what's the spread on that? Gone
It's
to 3.
3.5 as well.
So
Oh,
it's close. They're all close.
yeah,
So
is it? I think
let's.
1.5 in Buffalo and Jacksonville. That's the closest spread that I can see, anyway.
I got that as a
Oh,
pick and bet, but you
Green
can
Bay.
get, yeah, you can get
Okay. Yeah,
1.5
Green
as well.
Bay's
Okay.
getting one. Green Bay's getting one when
Oh,
I
are
looked
they?
at it this morning.
Okay. Yeah.
Buffalo, Jacksonville's getting 1.5 at home. San Francisco was getting 4, which really amazed me.
Yeah.
Just
So
because
they're all
it's.
incredibly close. Like last year, we had games that were 10, 12, and 15 point spreads. And we can kind of start with one of those, which is the Rams at the Carolina Panthers. It's a 10.5 spread. 46.5 is the over under. For those of you who watched Saturday's game, John, I don't know how much you caught of the Tampa Bay Panthers game. None of them kind of lit the world. Neither
Too
of the
much,
teams lit
too
the world
much,
on
too much. No,
fire.
no matter how, no matter what you caught of it, it was too much.
I checked
Yeah.
it, beforehand, and I was like, God, the over-under's like 39. I said, ooh, and then I didn't back it, and I watched the first drive. Actually, I didn't watch the first drive. I was following it on the phone, and it was a touchdown, and oh, I've messed up here. And then I got home, and I saw that it was lashing rain. It was basically a storm, and there was not much scoring after that. So, look, the Panthers are, we mentioned, John, they're 225 to win the Super Bowl. I'm sure there's bigger out there as well if you went on Odds Checker or whatever, or went on the exchanges or any of the prediction markets or anything like that. Yeah, it's very difficult to see them coming out here with anything, or well, they're at home, but I mean, the Rams should steamroll them.
Yeah, you'd imagine so. Like the Carolina Panthers are, as the odds dictate, they're the weakest team that to have made it to this point of the season. They were the they seem to have just won the like getting out of the NFC South. All it seems like the three teams that were in the running. It's the three teams, if for people who aren't terribly familiar with the division standings, Panthers, Buccaneers, and Falcons all finished with 8 wins in that one. So it was, if any team had won one more game, obviously they would have qualified to the top there. So it seemed like nobody really wanted that, or certainly nobody was capable of putting their head too far ahead above the parapet to get that one done. But yeah, it's not gonna, like, to get to this point in the season, in the postseason for Carolina, would be viewed by them as a measure of success, and, you know, another notch along the road of having a young quarterback who they don't have to pay yet. So it's a cause for optimism, but their season, in all certainty, ends on, like you said, Kieran, probably at about midnight Irish time on Saturday night. The Rams are like well in with a shot of going all the way this year. Matthew Stafford has had a try. I didn't think he was capable of having this type of season anymore at this point in his career, but I saw the stats yesterday. I'm not probably going to remember them exactly, but it's something like 45 touchdowns against like only 6 or 7 interceptions on the year. Now it helps when you have someone like Puka Nacua to throw to, but that's just incredible performance from someone of his vintage, I would say. So it'll be interesting to see now that they're in. You know, the pressure for every single team to have made it this part of the season is much, much higher than it would have been last week or the week before or any point previously in the season. And sometimes you do have questions about teams about how they perform under the spotlight, you know, when the pressure is really, really on. But I just think this Rams team is significantly better, almost, you know, across the board than Carolina. So home field advantage might keep them in it, you know, for the first half, I would say. But this looks like, to me, like a game where the Rams will pull away a little bit in the second half. The spread is 10.5 on this one, as we mentioned a few minutes ago. That's a tricky one. A postseason 10.5 spread for a home team in this is sometimes a little bit dodgy. But you know, it's hard to look past a Rams win on this one, isn't it?
Instead of looking past, look back. Week 13, the 9-2 Rams went to the 6-6 Carolina Panthers. The spread was 10 points. It was 21-17 at the half, and the Panthers won 31-28.
Okay, well, there you go.
A pick six was kind of the difference in the game. Stafford threw a pick six, probably his worst game of the year. And I don't know if there's a logic behind it, if Canales, from his time coaching at Seattle, maybe has this kind of sort of understanding of the Rams. You know, it's hard to fit that in to the formula, but I think the Rams defense should be strong enough to keep Carolina at bay. You know, good enough to keep. You want to keep Bryce Young in the pocket. You have to keep an eye on Tet McMillan, who they're very good at getting him open, and he's a real strong candidate for the Offensive Rookie of the Year. But I agree with John. I just don't see how Carolina bring this game down short of a rainstorm like there was in Tampa last week.
Yeah, earlier on I mentioned about Bryce Young. I should say I knew 9 was way too low, but I was trying to think off. I found it in my notes. He's 35 attempts at 20 yards or more this season. Only 18 of those were completed, which is about 51% of them have been deep passes. And he's only gone one touchdown. So it is slowly with him, which, you know,
But
they
just
go
on that,
behind.
yeah, to that point, Kieran, I just have, looking at my notes here, going back to that Carolina Los Angeles game from, what did you say it was, my week 13?
13, yeah.
Yeah, in that game, Carolina, they gained, or they averaged, 5.8 yards per snap in that matchup. So, you know, they can move the ball effectively under the correct circumstances, but I just don't see them beating this Rams team twice within the span of a couple of months.
Yeah, they run the ball quite efficiently, very little play action. And that was been mentioned quite a bit in the Tampa Bay game that, like, they ain't fooling anybody when they go do things like. Okay, the Packers Bears.
How about a couple of flea flickers for Rico Dowdle?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What did he do? Did he drop one of them at the weekend? He did something a
That
bit
was
crazy.
brilliant. He skidded. He skidded and then threw and then pitched it back to
Yes,
Young.
that's what he did. Yeah, it
And
looked
it
like he
looked
was
so
running.
weird. It looked so weird that it didn't even look like Young knew that it wasn't a planned flea flicker. I mean, it looked like it was by the way he turned and slipped. But Young seemed to be caught by surprise by the lateral back.
No, they were that sort of stuff might be the sort of trickery. And New England were playing lots of the trickery at the weekend. But we'll talk about them in a moment. The Green Bay Packers are at the Chicago Bears, 5-6 about the Packers. The Bears are 10-11, 1.5 which is bet. 45.5 is the over under, even.
Bundle,
under
the
undo.
what now? over undle, the
Maybe that's
over undle,
cool. John, I'm down with
Rico
the kids. They're
Dowdle.
saying things like that. 6-7, 6-7, you know, things like that. Mike, the Bears are back in the playoffs. They're hosting a playoff game. It's a big night for them. And of course, welcoming in a Packers team they'd be very familiar with, having played a number of times over the season. This one should be very, very close right up to the end.
I think so, and their games were close during the season. They didn't show much against Detroit that would lead you to think that they're an overpowering force, and it didn't appear to be that they were holding back either. They seemed to be playing that one for real, and they lost C.J. Gardner-Johnson, which is probably a difficult thing. To me, the most interesting stat I saw during the thing was that although he fell short of 4,000 yards, Caleb Williams became the leading passer yardage-wise in Bears history, replacing Eric Kramer and 3 seasons of Jay Cutler.
Yeah,
And
household names. Star of
you
Laguna
wonder,
Beach.
yeah, you wonder why Sid Luckman is still the greatest quarterback in Bears history, even though he left, played his last down, I think, in 1948 or something like that. And he's still the best quarterback in Bears history. But this was coming close to 4,000 yards. They're the only team in the NFL that has never had a 4,000 yard passer, carrying on the tradition of George Halas. And I think Caleb came alive in the fourth quarter, which is he's like a one man Sean Payton team. He really tends to turn it on when the level of play breaks down. And I think the problem for Green Bay, pure and simple, is that without Micah Parsons, that breakdown game is going to be a lot harder for them to win. Everyone was, I've said this so many times, but Micah Parsons impresses me the most when he's not used as a straight on edge rusher. When he's allowed
Like
to
plays off the
rush
ball or
from other
something.
parts of
Yeah.
the field, and because he's so versatile. Brother Love is back at quarterback for the Packers, which is a good sign. Although Malik Willis
Yeah, he didn't
played
just, he
well,
played very well. Yeah. Not
yeah.
bad. Future Browns quarterback Malik Willis.
Yeah, I think that's why they played him. I think it was to get,
Yeah.
to showcase him for other teams. I think it's more that I'd like to see Green Bay play, but I really think that Ben Johnson's gonna have a good game plan drawn up to take advantage of Micah Parsons' absence and to take advantage of the idea that Green Bay play a kind of control you bend but don't break kind of offense, defense. And I'm not sure that the young receiving core of Green Bay are consistent enough to beat the Bears unless they can get off to a really good start and then survive Caleb Williams in the fourth quarter. So, 1 point in this game, I'm not really interested. 46, check the weather report, and if the weather's windy or rainy, maybe go under the 46. But otherwise, I think it's Chicago in 46.
Ooh, Chicago, you think same, John, Packers or Bears? What you got?
Yeah, I think I'm actually leaning towards Green Bay in this one. I think it's just it's a familiar, like they're on the road, obviously. And I have to just stick to my gimmick and point out Mike, still my gimmick there with the weather report. But I do underscore it that that's this if you're looking to for weather impacted games, Chicago would be a big one this time of year. So do pay attention to that. But all that sort of stuff, notwithstanding, I just think Green Bay coming to this one has favorites in my eyes. Like I said, it's a familiar divisional matchup, and I think experience of winning just kind of favors them a little bit more in this one. They might just be a bit more used to the moment or accustomed to it. As well as that, I think like the The Bears have had a tremendous season, like really, really good 11-4 record, and some of the and Caleb Williams, as Mike was just alluding to a few minutes ago, has stood out as like a good NFL quarterback this year, which is kind of what you hope the bare minimum you hope for with a first round or a first pick in the draft kind of thing. But despite that 11-4 record, I think some of their underlying metrics lag a little bit behind some of the other playoff teams. They're not brilliant. Now we're talking the cream of the crop. Now I'm talking about amongst these types of teams, but they rank quite poorly in net yards per play and opponents' success rate and things like that. So I think this is one of the games that if Green Bay and Jordan Love can limit turnovers, if they can keep the ball in their own team's hands, I just think they'll have a little bit more in the tank to get this one done. And I think if the Bears don't play a perfect game, I don't think they'll be coming up well in this one. This is the sort of game where it's going to be a tight one, as suggested by the spread. And I think they're a little bit more error or mistake prone than Green Bay are. And I think this is the type of game where those mistakes will be very, very costly. So I just think that Green Bay's experience, their efficiency, and the return of Jordan Love will be the edge in these types of games.
Chicago's a really good team at takeaways. They've been very lucky in that sense. They had another one in the game against Detroit, which was pure a fluke, but again, they got their takeaway.
I too like takeaways.
It's tough. And I think Green Bay being rested is probably a good thing too. They basically went into the tank for their game
Yeah,
last
against
week.
Minnesota. Yeah.
Okay. But it's one for Green Bay and it's one for Chicago. That's interesting. I like that. I like that. Okay. Game of the weekend, maybe we'll see Bills at Jacksonville. I think if you told anyone that the Bills were playing Jacksonville in the first round of the championship, or of the playoffs, sorry, to price it up, they wouldn't have priced it up as it is because it's currently pick 'em. It's 9-10. You can get the Bills minus a point, minus 1.5 points, excuse me. Jacksonville 1.5, but obviously you're eating in then you're 4-5 on that. 51.5 is the highest, I think. Maybe San Fran Eagle. No, yeah, it is. Yeah, it is one of the higher. It is the highest over of the. So we're expecting a high scoring game. John, I'll come to you first on this one. This should be a cracker. I'm leaning towards the Bills, just based on, as Mike said, I think the Superman element of Josh Allen. But man, if Jacksonville win this game, I mean, well, they'll be thinking we could go home field all the way to the Super Bowl.
Absolutely. Like it might just be the slight contrarian element of me, but I do think that the Jaguars are very much, well, they are, they're clearly very much in the game ahead of it, but I think that they might just sneak a win in this one, which would be the biggest or huge win for them, one of the best in their in recent franchise history, of course. They come into this one on the back of an 8-game winning streak, and it doesn't to me now. I'm not going to say I've watched every snap of the Jaguars going throughout the course of the season, but from what I've seen, they look to have earned what they have got to this point in the season. It's not through any. Like we were just talking with some other teams about being, having some good fortune as it relates to turnovers or various other things in that regard. But I think Jacksonville have sort of earned their position here. And they have, I know Mike and I slightly differ on our opinions on the effective force of momentum. I do think it's quite important, particularly at this part of the season. Yeah, so that's on their side. And I just think this isn't like, I don't think anybody would come back to us and say that this is like a vintage Bills team of the Josh Allen era. It's not really that team. They've got a lot of holes in their run defense. Like Josh Allen, Superman cape and all, is continuing to play at a very, very high level, but it's hard to ignore some of those defensive flaws, particularly as we get to this part of the postseason. So, like, the defense has been one of the league's worst against the run this year. And I'm not saying that Jacksonville has an all-time, like, a league-leading running game, that kind of thing, but it's what we've seen throughout the course of the season is you don't necessarily need a league-leading running game to be effective against this Bills team at the moment. So that's why. It's those types of reasons, in my opinion, why the odds makers have kept this one really, really tight. As you say, Kieran, it's effectively a pick 'em game. And it's also those types of reasons why we're looking at the largest over-under here, as you said, Kieran, at 52.5. So I think this has the makings of a Jaguars win in a very high-scoring game. Just as a neutral, of course, that's kind of what I'm hoping for a little bit, because I'd like to see I'm still considering the Jags as kind of the underdog. In terms of stature going into this game. So I wouldn't mind seeing the Jaguars go through, so long as it's like a 37-30 kind of game. That's kind of what I'm rooting for. So I think the over is achievable here, and I just don't think we can discount the Jaguars going into this game.
Okay. Note that Travis Hunter's not nowhere to be seen in this game. You know, kind of
They
like
so
they
I'm not
needed.
saying it's a causation doesn't mean correlation or the other way around, but they've been so really, really good since he got injured.
I know is they got he got injured and Jacoby Myers showed up and they were like a different team. It's really strange. But their defense is really good. I think they're solid at all three levels. Devin Lloyd and Foyisade. What's his last name? Oluokun, who was a safety at Yale. And is a linebacker in the NFL, played for the Falcons for all that time. You know, he's a tackling machine, and Lloyd has played really well. Hines Allen has played really well.
The two Josh
I
Allens.
think
We might have
that's
some Josh Allen on Josh Allen action again, which is always fun.
why he probably changed his
A hundred
name
hundred
to
percent.
Hines Allen, yeah, just to avoid that situation. But you know, Tyson Campbell's good. You know, there's quite a few
Tyson Campbell plays for
quite
the
a
Cleveland
few.
Browns, Mike.
What?
They traded him. Tyson Campbell plays for the Browns.
Oh, that's right. They gave it to ooh,
Yeah,
God.
they got Greg Newsome, is who you're thinking of,
Yeah,
probably.
Greg Newsome was not really good. I knew it was one of the corners who was out there. So yeah, God.
Who, Mike, who
Okay,
do you fancy?
who would I fancy?
Yeah, who's going to win it?
Yeah, I'm really keen on yeah, what's her name? Buckley, Carrie Buckley, the actress,
Good God.
in
Kieran, you
Jessie
walked into
Buckley.
that.
Sorry.
You walked into that one, Kieran.
Did I walk into that?
Yeah.
Did I? I
I don't
think
think
she's
you're.
like the most talented young actress I've seen in a long time.
Who's going to win the game, though, at this
Highly
point?
doubt
Oh,
she
the
listens
game.
to this show. Yeah, it's probably not high on her priorities list. Better ones, though. She's a tiny little thing. So yeah, I kind of am getting sentimentally attached to Josh Allen, the Buffalo Josh Allen, and thinking that Trevor Lawrence at some point reaches a wall. But whatever Liam Cohen is feeding him certainly seems to work because he's playing with that kind of consistency and looseness that he played in college. You know, he never looked bothered or worried or struggling in college. And then he got to the pros, and you know, regardless of the coach, he always seemed to be, you know, really on a tight leash. And he hasn't been that way. So I also hate hearing Duval. So I think I'm going to go with the Bills, which is not a great football reason.
No, it's not. No, last time Jacksonville Jaguars, of course, were in the AFC Championship game. They faced the Patriots in 2018. Blake Bortles outthrew Tom Brady, 293 passing yards. I think that game, which they lost, obviously 24-20, that might have been the one around when Deflategate started, I think. But maybe that's for another day.
No, it was against the Colts. Was Deflategate.
That's
But
right. It was the Colts.
that
Sorry,
was
yeah,
the
you're
one
right.
where that was the one where you know at that point everybody Jacksonville had beaten them. Didn't they beat the Patriots?
That season, they beat the Patriots and they were
Yeah,
winning going in. The Patriots scored two touchdowns late to win the game. Brady.
yeah. And everybody was talking about Jacksonville's, you know, defense. They were the defensive team of the decade, basically, and that basically didn't last too long because Bortles couldn't keep that up. He was, you know, he was how would you express it? He was no Trevor Banks.
Okay. They also had Lenny Fournette as a running back, which helps.
Trent Dilfer. He was no Trent Dilfer, put it that way.
The half nine game on Sunday is the San Francisco 49ers against the Philadelphia Eagles, two teams that I cannot make head nor tail of every single week. So I'll leave you to it. The San Francisco 49ers are 7-4. The Eagles are 4-9. 4.5 spread. 44.5 is the over under. The Eagles have been like just the most dispiriting defending Super Bowl champions. They are in the playoffs. Mike, you want to take it first? Like,
Yeah, it's as if
who?
they're trying to make 2023 happen again, and the fates keep stopping them from doing it, and they're just going to have to not try harder, you know. every Philadelphia fan is probably convinced that they're going to throw away a lead at some point in this game, and San Francisco's coming back. Most of the stuff points toward Philadelphia, but it has all season on paper, but they're not the team that they are, that they're supposed to be. I don't know what Trent Williams's status is right now. He's not declared, to ready to play. The San Francisco story all season has been injury. Brock Purdy had played really well up until the Seattle game last week. And, they looked like the 49ers of old, regardless who was in the rest of the lineup. Christian McCaffrey represents 37% of the San Francisco offense, and Seattle held him. Held him in check both as a receiver and a runner, and that to me is sort of the key to beating San Francisco. And what they did was, you don't let all the motion and stuff fool you. You kind of sit there and try to play straight up, regardless of what direction the line and the backs are going. And I think Vic Fangio is probably good enough to be able to do that. And Philadelphia's defense, although there's some questions about the rest of their secondary, if you can keep DeJean and Quinyon Mitchell getting the predominance of the coverage there, they've got a pretty strong front, and I think I think on paper they should be able to beat San Francisco. But giving San Francisco 4 in this game makes me think that the Niners in 4 is worth a bet, because I think it's probably a field goal game.
I see that. I do. John, I just said in the build-up, like, this is a really tough game because it depends on who kind of shows up a little on that. Like, I know that's kind of silly or kind of easy armchair punditry. Thank you. Glad you're listening to the pod for this. But like, it
You
just
fan
depends who
list.
turns up on the fucking day with these two teams, because they can be really, really bad on their day.
Yeah, it's hasn't been vintage, and certainly, as you said there, Kieran, about a defense of the Super Bowl winners last year. It's been a bit of a damp squib, all things considered. But I won't labor too much on this one. I agree with pretty much all of what Mike said there. But just in terms of this actual matchup, I just think in a game like this, it's you favor the home team. I would say Eagles have a better defense, kind of for almost across the board than San Francisco do. So in these types of games where it's there's a lot, maybe a lot of equals or a lot of things you're struggling to, put one above the other. I think that I would just leaning towards the Eagles winning this one at home, and I think it'll be potentially a low scoring game based upon their defense. So that's kind of what sticks out to me on this one.
Okay. 1 o'clock in the morning. Like, if you're a Patriot fan, they're always late, aren't they, these playoff games for you? But I think the AFC and NFC are six and half nine this year, so that's something. At least they used to be half nine and one or something, I remember.
The NFL doesn't really consider whether the fans are going to freeze to death when they're watching one of these games. It
This
starts at
is the
8 o'clock
thing, yeah.
at
We
night.
always say this. Yeah, they like to put the snow games at night. But look, the Chargers are at the Patriots. Mike, we come to you first on this, being your beloved New England. The Chargers 13-8, Patriots are 1-2, 3.5 is the spread, 46.5 is the over under. Patriots kind of stopped playing, on Sunday, probably in the second half. I mean, that's no bad thing, really. Like, they already knew where
No,
they were.
the game was won. Yeah, they didn't want to risk further injuries to a lot of players.
And Miami didn't seem too fussed about anything either, really.
Well, Miami looked like they were playing flag football at one point. It was like the Patriots would run the ball, and what was Stevenson? He only carried like six times, and he had 100 and some odd yards, and
He absolutely tortured Luka with
And it was like they were like, oh yeah, ole, you go that way. I that's why I thought Mike McDaniel was going to get fired, because I just thought they really looked like they had quit, and I it's really hard to judge the Patriots, because everybody knows they had a fairly weak schedule. In the end, they only beat one team with a winning record,
I didn't
which is not
realize
their
that. Is that the case?
Which
Wow.
is not their fault, because teams that should have been better weren't winning games. But May has been May has been really good, and they got their best offensive lineman and their best defensive lineman back last week for the first time in a number of weeks, which bodes well for taking on the Chargers, because in one sense the game kind of tilts toward the Chargers because their offensive line is lousy and Herbert's taken a beating all season, and the Patriots are not a great pass rushing team. In fact, they're not a great defensive team at all, I think. But if they can stop the run game, which Jim Harbaugh, does prefer to keep going, they've got a real good shot there. And defensively, they're a pretty good team, and very strong in the secondary, led by Derwin James. And he could be the difference maker, in this game, apart from Herbert. But I just kind of think I'd like it better if the Patriots were on the road, where they were 8-0 this year. They're the only undefeated team on the road in the NFL, and they were 7-, what were they? How many games do we play? 17. So they were
17.
6-3 at home.
Lost to the Bills, lost
Yeah,
to.
they had 3 losses and 6 wins at
Yeah.
home. So
Gotcha.
that, but I still think that 3.5. It is 3.5, or is it three?
Yeah. Three and a
Yeah.
half.
3.5 is pretty good for the Chargers, but I'll probably still stick with New England on this one.
Yeah. Like, if you had to pick anyone in the AFC to play a playoff game with at home, I think you'd pick the Chargers, John, and because we have spoken about them many times,
I'd
how
pick the
they're the kind
Raiders.
of people, maybe the Raiders, yeah, but they're the kind of team to get to the dance and then not perform at the dance, if you get what I mean. They tease us along the way. You may
Yeah,
have
you
called them
haven't.
cock
Am I correct in
teasers.
saying you've been burned by this over the years,
I
Clay?
have been burned by the Chargers a number of times. I'm not going to be burned this year by them because I did not get
Yeah.
involved, but I have in previous years
Yeah.
been swindled by by Justin Herbert and Harbaugh making me feel that they would go far when they're
No,
not. And
when
I
they
actually think
didn't.
they'll just go out first round again. So,
That goes back. You can go back to John Hadle and Sid Gilman and say the same thing, or Dan Fouts and Tommy Prothro, or it's been the Chargers story ever since they set foot on Earth.
Yeah, and I think when it goes wrong for them, it really can go wrong for them. We've seen a number of times where even this season, where you're like, "Ooh, they're not, they're taking a bit of a beating." But what do you think? Can they
I
roll into
think,
Patriots and win?
honestly, I hadn't spent a great deal of time thinking about this one because I had just assumed Patriots at home would win this. But Mike made a lot of good points there, that have made me sort of reconsider. Like, as a with regard to the Chargers now, they're like you mentioned the key in there about Herbert just getting beaten up. Like, I think that one of the biggest things that happened in the course of the Chargers season this year was the injury to Joe Alt. Like, that changed. That was hugely impactful on how that team performed in the running game and obviously protecting Herbert on his blind side. He's the the big body guy on the left tackle there.
Yeah,
So
and he was already moved to the left to replace Rashawn Slater, who was injured in preseason. So it's like one minute you've got two Pro Bowl offensive tackles, and the next minute you're putting a sign outside the stadium if you could play right tackle.
Are you 6'6"? Apply within, kind of thing. Yeah, I think so. That's a huge cause for concern. And it's not even just those two guys. There's been, a rake of injuries across the offensive line there. But even, one other thing, and I admit I didn't check this in advance of the show. So I'm curious to see if Omarion Hampton is fit to play. He didn't play last week due to injury, so I'm actually not sure of his status this week. But he seemed when he's been playing, he obviously picked up a big injury in the middle part of the season and then came back towards the end. And whenever he has played, he has seemed to be somewhat impervious to any sort of offensive line concerns. He's been a very, very good pick for them in the draft last season. So if he plays, it could be a big game changer for them. But yeah, Mike's made a lot of points that the Patriots benefited from one of the weakest schedules in the league this year. As he says correctly, it's no fault of their own. You got to beat what's in front of you. But they're playing the 11-6 Chargers, and there's a strong argument to make that this is the toughest game, like you'd imagine for the playoffs anyway. But just in terms of their schedule throughout the course of the 17 games that they've played to this point, this is probably the toughest team that they've played. And, they're at home, as Mike mentioned, a 6-3 record. So this is the type of game where some of those nagging statistics can really kind of show their face under the sunlight, so to speak, because defensively, they rank in the bottom third in a lot of key types of metrics. They don't have, as Mike also said, their lack of pressure on the opposing quarterback has been noticeable throughout the course of the season as well. So I think this matchup really will, show and reflect their actual true quality as part of the season, because they're going to get asked some questions. If the Patriots come out of this game with like a three touchdown win, if it's like, or if they dominate the game, if it's like a 28-7 kind of thing, which I don't personally expect to happen, but if they do, I'd be seriously looking at the Patriots as a contender to win the whole thing. Particularly as Drake May has looked like a fantastic player so far this year. But as things stand, and just with a few nagging questions about the Patriots when push comes to shove, and how the Chargers have played throughout this season, even despite being, hamstrung somewhat by his key injuries across key positions, I think the Chargers getting 3.5 in this one is the one that piques my interest the most.
Okay, the last game that we look at is the Texans at the Pittsburgh Steelers. Could have been the Ravens. Could have been the Ravens. 4-7 about the Houston Texans. The Pittsburgh Steelers are 11-8. Oh, 3-point spread. Just got some feedback in my ears. 39.5. Pretty low over under. John, Texans at Steelers. It's been a strange season for both, especially I think the Texans, who have kind of been up and down. But they're in the playoffs, taking on the Steelers, who, again, you missed last week's show, but we were talking about, would Mike Tomlin kind of is having a winning season without being in any way, shape, or form Super Bowl contenders enough for the people who are on the Pittsburgh Steelers. But they're back in the playoffs, and it's another one of those games that's going to be kind of hard to call, really.
Yeah, I just off the bat, I would say that the Texans defense will be the biggest factor in this game. If they can be as dominant as they've shown throughout the course of the season, I think they'll win this one pretty handily. But I think Pittsburgh are the AFC's Carolina Panthers, in the sense that they were the one who just managed to not fuck it up as much as the other teams in the in their division. So yeah, they got there by being, they didn't get into this part of the postseason by playing outstanding football. They played the least worst football in the AFC North, so that's what gets you to the postseason these days sometimes. But yeah, I just think this Houston team will have a bit too much for them. Like, Aaron Rodgers raises their postseason ceiling a little bit, I think, just in terms of sheer experience and game know-how and offensive nous, is that a word? Whatever that word is,
Mouse,
but
yeah,
nous,
definitely mouse.
But they're also a team that historically performed quite well as underdogs. But it's been a long time since the team has won a playoff game, Kieran, as you were mentioning as well. Like, I remember the Browns putting an absolute beating on them in the playoffs about 3 or 4 years ago now at this stage. So I just don't think it's going to be. Look, they're just that team that they've not impressed me really at any point throughout the course of the season. And if they win a playoff game against probably the best defense in the league, I think I'd be very surprised. So I think the under 39.5 is looking good to me in this one. Like, Pittsburgh haven't looked like a team all year that has been able to throw too many points on the board. They will have DK Metcalf back after his, shall we say, argument with the, was it a, who were they playing? Was that
With
the
the world,
Lions?
with the world, Lions, wasn't it? Yeah, he called him his. He had the audacity to call him by his correct name. Seemingly, he doesn't like DK.
Exactly. So yeah, we don't look DK Metcalf in the eyes, I suppose, is the lesson we can learn from that one. But yeah, I just think this will be a tricky game now, and I don't think the Texans will blow them away by any stretch of the imagination, as this looks to me the sort of game where creating separation, kind of, separation on the scoreboard might be quite difficult for either team to really do in this one. So I think this game will be up for grabs in the fourth quarter. But I just can't see the Texans losing this one. I just think they're a little bit more of a well-oiled unit. They're certainly way
It's
better on defense. That's that. I think that's
yeah,
going to be the key.
yeah
Okay.
that and that's I mean, and Pittsburgh are no slouches either, and CJ Stroud hasn't been playing extremely well. It's funny because the game might boil down to which team's big receiver plays better. Houston's secondary is great. I mean, they've got real depth in the secondary, and I think they can control DK Metcalf. And Houston, when they get in trouble, really rely on Nico Collins, who's like the poor man's Puka Nacua, to make outstanding catches over the middle. But I agree with most of what John said there. I think that when you put the front that Houston has, the pass rush there, it's going to be too much for Pittsburgh's offensive line. Rodgers is going to have a really tough time in getting his game together. And If he can't hit DK, if Jaylen Warren doesn't have a big game, they're pretty much toast. And I kind of agree that the under is certainly with a fighting shot there in this game.
Okay, one last thing just before we move on to best bets of the play. If I was to push you, because let's do a little hacker. Let's do a little hacker. The Rams Panthers, we're going for the Rams, right? 1-6. Forget about it. Forget about it. Packers Bears, we had a little bit of a dispute. We'll say John went
Not
Packers.
mu not much of a dispute. I mean,
Who are we going for then?
that's going to be a tight, that's going to be a really tight game. I like I said, I want the Packers to win.
I'll go with Packers then. Okay,
I'm
okay.
sort of going with the home team though. Yeah,
Bills and Jags.
that's another tough.
Jags.
They're all tough ones. Jags, though. We're
We're
being
going Jags.
contrarians here.
San
Yeah,
Francisco 49ers, Philly Eagles. Eagles?
Philly.
Eagles, yeah.
Philly. Chargers, Patriots. Patriots.
Patriots.
Yeah,
Patriots.
Patriots.
Texans, Steelers, Texans. So
Texans, yeah.
a so Rams, Packers, Jags, Eagles. Patriots, Houston, sixfold pays 12.84. So stick a tenner on it and you will get back 138.37. So there you go. That
There
is
we
our
go.
wild card weekend ACCA.
Is
Who will let us down?
that your six and sevens thing? 138-37?
That's how it is. It'd be so,
Anyway,
it wouldn't be
last
funny if the Panthers won, but it would kind of be just like,
yeah.
fuck this game.
Last week on any given game day,
Wish for
John Bell
yourself.
phoned it in, and it was Dallas against the Giants at the Giants
So did
minus
the Cowboys.
3.5, and the Giants won that one 34-17. So
Was a close one.
if we add the 3.5, it
Yeah,
becomes a 20-point game. Kieran had the over in New Orleans, Atlanta, which was 44, and that game was 19-17.
that
And
was
I had
nasty,
the
man.
over in Miami, New England, which was 45-5, and that cleared by 2.5, much to my surprise.
Well, it
watching
was
the way the Bears.
14-7 with 10 minutes gone in it. So you must have been pretty okay. You must have felt like it was
Yeah,
doing all right.
it slowed down in the middle
Yeah.
half of the game, and then it picked up again toward the end. But 38, the Patriots scored 38, so that got most of the way there anyway. So with two losses and one win, the regular season ended with Kieran at 8-9, John at 9-8,
Perfect.
and me at 11-6.
Oh, two
11 and
games.
6 is pretty decent. Yeah, I'll give you
Yeah.
that now. I'll give you that, yeah.
Yeah, and there were only 17 games because we didn't do any over Christmas, in case anyone's
I think
listening and
mine won
cares.
over Christmas though, so I
Yeah,
am
sure it did, Kieran.
We
So
all
sorry.
did. Yeah, we all did. We all had winners over
Well,
Christmas.
it's kind of level then, really. Okay, who wants to go first in what is more important, really, which is the best bet of playoff weekend? Since you won it all, I suppose we should give it to you.
Are we not keeping the record going into the postseason? Is it over? Did Mike win?
Well, let's see how we go on in the postseason. We
I think
decide
I
whether
get
we continue or start a
the
new
Liam
thing.
McCarthy trophy or
Okay,
something like
right.
that. The Liam Cohen trophy, and then there'll be
With Mick
another
McCarthy,
trophy.
yeah. Now we're playing for
Yeah.
Sam, yeah. Okay, but you can still go first, Mike.
Okay, well, I mean, I am the Undertaker this week, and the only question to me is which under strikes me as the most attractive. And I'm going to go with the Green Bay and Chicago under 46.
Okay. And John, you were second, I suppose, by default.
Yeah, I thought I was going to be really cheeky and just go for Rams money line just to get a win. Yeah, fair enough, fair enough. So I'll be
Can't do that. You can't have a 1-6 chance. We're out on
the
that.
undertaker. I'll pick the other under. I assume Mike was thinking there that Houston and Pittsburgh won. I'll go under 39.5. Was that the other under, Mike?
In fact, I've got unders for four of the six
Oh,
games, and
boy.
I wouldn't probably go over on the other two. I mean, San Francisco, Philly under 45.5, I think is pretty reasonable too.
Yeah. Well, okay.
So
Well,
I'm going to
just
go
for
for an
yes.
over. You
Oh,
can go
Kieran.
first though, John.
Well, okay. Well, I said it there, but yeah, just for formality's sake, under 39.5 in Houston at Pittsburgh.
Okay, I'll go over in the Jags Bills 51.5.
Oh, look at you.
Let's give us some entertainment. Are you not entertained?
I think
Just.
I'd be under in that one too.
All right. Well, fuck you.
now that I'm looking at it. Yeah, so that would be the fourth under the Rams, Carolina. I wouldn't go under because who knows what's going to happen if the Rams go out to a big lead. And
I wonder what you get for under in all the games, the most
that would be an
sad bet.
interesting bet, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Well, it's the same
Is
as going
it? It
over.
is
Yeah, so
a
it's
sad
even money
bet,
each
yes.
way.
What
It's
would you
even
get? What
money.
would you?
Well, it would be high because it's six even money chances.
This goes
So
against everything Kieran believes in, though, betting for the
this
under.
actually, like, if I hit this into the bet slip, they'll ask me if I'm okay. I assume. Total points. If I go under in every single game, under, the odds are 46-1.
Ooh,
So,
you know what?
a
Put a
tenner
tenner on that one.
would
Yeah.
return 470. And there we
Okay.
go. If you do that, though, you're obviously like you'll win in life, but will you really win is
We'll win the bet. You'll win €470,
question.
Kieran.
And that is it. Look, hopefully, you enjoyed that show. It's a bit longer than usual. Obviously, six games and a lot of things we want to cover with the Super Bowl. We will be back next week to cover more of the divisional round and then, of course, the conference and, of course, the Super Bowl. Let's hope for lots of winning bets and some good games. Well, actually, if you listen to these two, they don't want good games because they just want the games to finish 9-3. But hopefully, at least one of them will finish more than 9-3.
Well, I'm waiting for halftime at the New England Chargers game, and then when they come back out, all of a sudden this music comes out of the stadium, and the announcers goes, "Oh my God, Tom, that's John Harbaugh's music," and the two Harbaugh brothers come walking out together.
Yeah, the
Oh,
Harbros.
they have been known to fight at Christmas, with their tops off. So there you go. That's a good way to end the show. Goodbye to everyone. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again next week. Bye for now.